Okay, the reason I wanted to come down here, I talked to Tom, is I wanted to do a complaint under 11910 against the clerk of the court's office. Purposely, with intent and forethought, withheld records, which I had in my hand, which they had got for me out of archives. I guess I'll tell you the story, okay, and then you decide what you want to do. Several months ago, Carol Mapp, who is Dr. Wynn's nursing assistant, is a friend of mine, and she called me and said that her relative was murdered down at Panama City Marina. His name, they called him Tootie Coffin, but I called him Romeo, because I had to investigate Romeo back during the mail bombs in 1989 and 90, when they were killing the federal judges. I hit the FBI on that case, and it led me to and also the Gulf Power case, which was this same Mr. and Mr. McRae, okay, in Graceville, and it led me to track down a Dixie Mafia shooter by the name of Daniel Lloyd McClellan. Right, now McClellan is a close friend of Frank McKeithen, and he's, in the past, I got stuff on him, depositions in court of him, them running the burglar ring in Bay County, and in fact, he was arrested in Alabama for fence items that were stolen from Money Construction Company. Now, I won't go any further on that, but make a long story short, this guy, too, was a lifelong boyfriend of Michelle McClellan and father to some of her children. Okay? In 1989, the case I was looking at, Harvey Lee Parks. Okay, State of Florida versus Harvey Lee Parks, Jackie Housen, and Rebecca Google. McClellan and his team were in the Carolinas robbing banks, running a credit card ring, stolen credit card ring, and he got a call to do a contract. I suppose it was contract killing. Okay, in Florida. Panhandle, Florida, Panama City, or Jacksonville, I don't know. So, they came down here, and while they were down here, Paul Winterman arrested McClellan for holding a gun up to a guy's head out here and pulling the trigger twice, and he missed fire, but previously he'd be fired. So they had him on assault with felon with possession of deadly weapon. And he was supposed to be in the Bay County Jail. But while he was in the Bay County Jail, the people with him were running out of money. They were snorting cocaine. They were staying at Danny McClellan's daughter's house, Michelle McClellan, Tootie's girlfriend. All right? And then they went out to the Gold Nugget, and leaving the Gold Nugget, they got a hold of this beach in the head. Okay, and then they took him on back to Michelle's house. And then her boyfriend, her live-in boyfriend at that time, which was another guy, really, okay, named Brian Peters. And his brother was a deputy somewhere in Washington County, I think. Well, they helped him dispose of the body and the gun. Okay, so I was trying to make put a connection because I knew that Colvin's name was in there. There was another Colvin name in the file, too. So I didn't let anybody know this because I had, the family had told me that they got autopsy pictures coming that would show that Tootie was just beaten up and everything else. Took a real bad beating before he went into the bay. Sure, he drowned. You know, he drowned, that's for sure, a pulmonary edema, but he was probably unconscious. More than likely, he's unconscious due to the wounds. And so I kept my mouth shut and waited for several months. Got that paperwork from the family and the photographs, the autopsy report, the crime scene photographs, and also most of the investigative file, but what Panama City has done is they have not given a complete file. So, in my mind, I could see these depositions of Jackie Housen and Michelle McClellan and Harvey Lee Parks talking about this murder in 89 and the fact that this guy had broken up with Michelle 2 or 3 months before his demise. And he apparently had been involved in a drug situation, a drug deal, and he told a lot of people that if he went down, Frank McKeithen was going to go down. So, you know, 2 weeks later after he makes the statement, the man's a floater in the marina. So, you know, I investigate. So I came in from Mobile. Okay, you know, I operate everywhere now. Okay, Mobile here and Enterprise and Ocala, Florida and all over. And I came in from Mobile waiting on these files. And it last Wednesday, and the file was going to be made available to me from the family. So I called the courthouse, talked to the clerk's office in the felony division, and I actually talked to the lady been there that remembered the case. I don't remember her name, but she told me the number to call in archives. I called the guy that handles the archives. I've talked to him before. He was real nice. He said, "Yeah, John, we'll get you the file." And Brenda was getting the file for me. I talked to Brenda too. So Brenda, there's a lot of people who knew I wanted that file. Okay, Frank McKeithen probably knew it. Okay, people in the courthouse knew it. And somewhere along the grapevine, maybe 5 or 6 people knew it. I don't know who knew it, but we need to find out. Okay, in the file, I went over to the courthouse room log. Felony room and sat there, waited on 10 minutes. They brought it. They were really nice. I thanked them for it and immediately began reviewing the file. And right off the bat, the lady that I had called to get the file, I mean, the first time, was over there really, you know, just, she didn't like how I was reviewing the file. I kept my mouth shut. And I couldn't understand what was wrong, so my cell phone rang. And on the cell phone, it was Carol Mell. Okay, this boy's aunt. And she was doing some stuff for me and trying to locate some stuff. And they told me that I'd have to shut it off, and they wouldn't allow that at the courthouse. And I said, okay. And so I clicked her off. And I asked her to find out who, what department Brian Pierce, his brother, worked for, because he helped them dispose of the gun. Full cop and you helped them dispose of the gun. That's in the deposition.
Who did you ask?
Brian Pierce.
Who did you ask that of?
I asked Carol to find out what department on my cell phone,
all right?
And so she was going to call me back because I thought it was Bay County. I didn't know. And so she called back again and I just didn't even answer because they were complaining. But there was nobody there in the felony division except this. The people was known to work at. So I saw the pages that I wanted. So I looked at this same clerk and I said, okay, I'd like to make copies of these pages. And she said, well, you're not going to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to do that. I already know you're not going to be able to make copies. And I said, well, why? She said, well, because they belong to the court reporters. And you have to go through them to get permission to court for us. And I said, well, no, ma'am. I said, that's not the law. The law says that, you know, these were paid for 17 years ago, and they're public records. And I said, you go get me the statute, show me the exemption, I'll eat it and go home, all right? I mean, it's a joke, you know? And I was real nice to her. And so she comes back and she says, no, we're not going to let you have a copy. Okay, and I said, no, no, no. The law says I'm entitled to a copy. I said, go get your supervisor. Okay, so the supervisor came in there, and she gave me the same spiel, and she told me, she said, that's proprietary work product of the court reporter, and, you know, everybody heard that, all right? And I said, no, ma'am, I'm a journalist, and now I got 119 in my pocket and in my mind, and I've been to the hearings for the legislature, and that's wrong. I said, even if you tell me this, you must show me in writing the exemption, and I'll be glad to leave. Otherwise, I want my copy. And he said, no, we're not going to do it. And I said, well, at this point, I'm going to ask that you call the Bay County Sheriff's Department because I'm going to ask that you be placed under arrest for a willful violation of 119.10. And I was within my rights to do that. So he called the Sheriff's Department in there, and they had told the Sheriff's Department I was causing disturbance. I wasn't causing disturbance. There was nobody waiting in line to be waited on. There was nobody there. And I'm sure those people had probably hollered at each other in the past when nobody was around. In every office environment, you do that. I was a little bit loud. I did not curse. I did not use any bad language. I didn't act up. I just told the deputy, I said, look, you know as well as I do what the law is. And these clerks know the law. They're schooled in it. They know 119, and they know these records do not belong to the court reports. And I said, well, go ask again. She came back again. She said, yes. She said, it's proprietary work product. I said, ma'am, you show me the statute. And she said, we don't have to do that. We're going to ask you to leave. And I said, ma'am, I don't have to leave. I'm a member of the media until you give me the copy of the exemption, at least. Then she went back to see Harold Basil again. And they came back again. And she said, well, we've decided that you can have a copy, but what we want you to do is mark up what you want, and you come back in a couple of days. I said, well, look, I'm an investigative reporter. I mean, do you want me to show you what I'm looking for? I said, that defeats the whole purpose of 119. I said, the law says that anybody can walk in off the street and make these copies from 8 to 5 your business hours, as long as it's reasonably available. I was reading the deposition. It was already in my hand. Now, Bill, if I walked in there and somebody else and banged my fist and people have been waiting in line and I said, I want the copies now, and they didn't have them, I would have been disorderly. But I wasn't. You know, I was reasonable. The law says as long as you're this reasonable, you can have the copy. Normally, I'm accustomed to, in other courthouses in Florida, in Alabama, Louisiana, anywhere else I operate, Georgia, is going in and telling what I want, and they're going to make a copy, and I pay them for it. And so what happened is, I said, no, that's not acceptable. I still want to see the exemption, all right? And I still want, you know, I want my copy. And so they said, well, you know, if you don't leave, we're going to have you arrested. I said, well, you can't arrest me. I had the man here to arrest you. And then the officer said, well, if you don't leave, you're going to arrest you. I said, officer, you know the law.
Let me stop you at this point. You're starting to get into some facts now that have to do with the charges against
that's
you.
Fine.
So I just want to tell you that anything you say could be used against you.
I know that.
Let me get mine out. I've let you talk. Let me talk. Anything you say could be used against you.
I know that.
The right to be represented by a lawyer.
I'm a lawyer.
Okay. Mr. Willoughby said that you had turned down the public defender's office.
Yes, I did.
And that you were willing to come here representing yourself.
Right.
I just want to make sure that you understand the consequences of making statements, especially on tape.
I understand that. Well, what I'm here to do is to file a complaint.
Okay. Well, I want
to get that out of the way. I'm here to file a criminal complaint. I'm not here to negotiate my case, because this has nothing to do with my case. Today, I've got to file a case against the clerk of the court for willful and intentional violation and withholding the copies under 119.10. And he's guilty of all of them because, see, this is a first-class misdemeanor. It requires that he either be, the clerk be banned from state 4 years, or that the clerk of the court can be impeached. Now, the law's very specific as far as punishment. They definitely intended not to let me have, somebody called them and told them not to let me have those copies. Now that's who I want to get. I'm trying to investigate, but I'm not going to do anything until discovery. But somebody apparently called, somebody that knew I was forthcoming. That's all it could have been.
I don't think that that's an accurate statement. I don't know, you know, and obviously you don't know.
No, I don't.
But I will tell you that historically that has been the rule over there, albeit I think incorrect, that if there's a deposition in there, the court reporters always considered that their product, and they did charge, and that's historically been done. I don't think that that is accurate, and you know, and obviously the clerk's office came to the same conclusion because they came back and told you, you know, we're going to give you the copies. So, you know, I don't think that there has been a violation of the Sunshine Law because they told you that they were going to, not the Sunshine Law, the Public Records Law, because they told you they were going to give you the copies. Now, I'm a little confused about, you said something about you weren't going to tell them what you wanted, but then My question is, if you weren't gonna tell them what you wanted, how were they gonna copy what you wanted?
That's the whole purpose of 119. Let me explain to you. What they have done, they've set up a policy contrary to the law of the courthouse. And their policy is totally against the Sunshine Law. Okay, because what they've done is set a deputy system for the court reporters. And I want to know, first of all, in my criminal complaint, who's getting the money? Okay, because apparently they're charging $3 a page for this.
No.
Well, whoever's getting the money, I want to know who's getting the money, because the taxpayers have already paid for the record once. So now we got to determine which court reporters are getting this bonus money. No, that's criminal, because what you got, that's the criminal allegations here. Because what you've got is a system that's been set up by the clerk of the court to reward above and beyond normal compensation, which is a crime. Okay?
The court reporters have always, because they were, up until recently, they were private contractors. In other words, I hired John Kaler to come in here and take this deposition
right.
for me. And then I paid you for the copy. I got a transcript, the actual, I guess you'd say, it truly wasn't copyrighted, but the actual data, or whatever you want to call it, was the property of the court reporter. I don't agree with that. I mean, I don't think that that's an accurate statement of the law. I've got to agree with you on that. But they, historically, that has been the case.
Yeah, historically, because that set of policy.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a policy of the clerk's office. I think it was, quite frankly, something that the court reporters just got everybody to agree to, and I think it predated the public records law, really. But regardless of that, the clerk's office came to the conclusion that you were, in fact, right. They were going to give you your copies. They weren't going to charge you $3 a page.
They defeated 119, totally.
They didn't.
Yeah. That's why I want to get a prosecutor, because they intentionally, because it was not their intention to give me the copies.
John told me that they came out and said, we're going to give you the copies. Tell us which ones you want.
After the threat of arrest, 3 or 4 times.
Okay.
Now, what if anybody else walks in there? They've done this before. They've told people that you got to go call. See, they even said you got to call the court reporters to get their permission. And she called the court reporters and said, well, they're not in. You'll have to come back another day.
Historically, you have actually purchased the document from the court reporter.
Historically, let me tell you what happens. I've talked to several lawyers on this with First Amendment Foundation, and you're absolutely wrong. Okay, the way it works is the court reporters call in by the court for a deposition. Okay, they do the depositions, and if the depositions are going to be typed up and transcribed, then there's an order by the judge to have them done that way, and they're paid for that. And that becomes public record at that point. There is no proprietary clerk of the court is trying to extend to them. Their work product does not extend 17 years. That's what you call bribery and extortion. And paying off, that's corruption. And now let me tell you the flip side of that I've seen, and I have, since I have done this, had calls on. People have told me that the record has been changed in their appeal cases. Now this is the way you do it. You double indemnify the clerks. You give them a slush fund over here, so that all they got to do is go change their tape and go change their record, and then the deposition you give is totally different from the deposition that was taken. Now, the law says that their work product is that tape. You can't touch that tape, because I've subpoenaed for the tape before, and you can't touch it. But you can touch the deposition. So what Basil has done, and he is corruptly, with malice, intent, and forethought, and this is the elements of the crime, the three elements of crime, malice, intent, and forethought, he has purposely set up a reward system to corrupt his court clerks. And this office, or any office that sanctions that, is sanctioning corruption. And also another horse, another animal that law says that we don't have nothing to do with, because the law says nowhere that court reporters' stuff is proprietary after it hits the record.
And I think that's what the clerk determined by their telling you, Mr. Kaler, we're going to give you the record. What do you want?
that point, it defeated the whole purpose of me being there. Because if I wanted to let Frank McKeithen and I wanted to let everybody know what I was looking for, at that point, it was useless to me.
Well, John, this is this claim that Frank McKeithen was going to make unsubstantiated.
I mean, that's right.
Speculation.
That's right. It's pure speculation until I find the record. But at that point, it's no longer useful for me because the usefulness went out the door. Just like the usefulness for 119 goes out the door where the Republic officials can take the records, sanitize them, and give you what they want you to see.
Well, how would they
make the record different? Now, that's the problem that we have here. The statute said, 119 said that people shall have the right to walk in and inspect those records and make copies of them right there that you got the record. And I had the record in my hand. There was nobody there. I had the record. I said, look, I want copies of these pages. Please, you know, let's do them now. No, no, no. They don't belong to us. They belong to the court reporters. You got to get permission from them. And then I had to go through this battle of asking for permission of them and trying to get these people to do the right thing. And they violated every step of the law. She's going to sanction that. That's fine. Well, I'll take it further. Okay, I'll ask the statewide grand jury to step in here. But the thing is, I want my complaint prosecuted. Now, if you don't prosecute my complaint, that's where I'm going.
You're
entitled to. Because I have a complaint.
You have a complaint. I've heard your complaint.
Will you tell me what?
I'm telling you that based on what you've told me, they didn't violate the law.
Well, how did they not violate the law by denying me the records?
Women, those ladies over there are not lawyers. They don't know what the law
no,
is.
No, they do too. They're schooled by the clerk. Let me tell you, Pat Mann is my former partner. He was a bailiff for Judge Cooper and those judges up there. He said, Judge Cooper and those people get instruction all the time on what's what on public records in that courthouse. Those clerks knew right down to the statute what the statute says. And they deliberately, somebody gave the order that we'd hold production of those records to me. Copying of those records.
That's speculation, John.
No, it's not speculation.
Well, who did it?
They withheld the records.
Who did it?
I don't know, but we're going to find out.
Speculation.
I think you need to launch an investigation, go back and ask Mr. Basil and ask these other people, who was it that gave the order to tell me that those were not public records, I couldn't make a copy, who was it that insisted on not giving me the copy until the last minute?
Well, they came back and they told you, we were going to give you the records, identify what you want. How else were they going to provide you with the records you wanted but for you identifying?
They wanted me to come back another day for them. And that's the whole deal.
Yeah.
If I got to come back another day for the record, then they have my record, they can review it, you can review it, or anybody can review it, and they decide what I'm looking for. So the whole purpose of me being a journalist is a journalist. The whole purpose, my purpose has gone out the window.
If you told them, all right, you want pages, say you wanted all the odd pages in the deposition, all right, if you told them that, and they Xeroxed all the odd pages, what would keep them from looking at those odd pages after you left?
You don't understand how it's traditionally been done. Well, yes, you do understand. You know very well how it's done.
Well, answer my question.
The question is, the answer to that is I have a right under the statute to go in there under 119.10 and ask for those records right then and there that I'm inspecting. The clerk is obligated under the law to make me a copy right then and there, not later to come back to see later, not to come back a couple of days from now. It says right then. It says the statute says they're opening for inspection if they're reasonably available. And so that's my contention. And this thing about letting the court reporters have their own little slush fund, that's wrong. They violated the intent.
Answer my question, John.
They violated the intent.
You want to answer my question?
Your question is why didn't they even log pages? It doesn't matter.
No, you said that they defeated the intent by asking you to identify what you wanted.
Yeah, I was going to identify what I wanted. But I didn't want to have to come back and pick it up a couple days later. and that was what they led me to believe, that it would be a couple of days and I could come back and get it. Sure, I told them what to do right then and there if they'd have brought me the copies, but they wasn't going to do that.
But they gotta know what you want before they make the copy.
Yeah, that's fine. I wouldn't mind doing that if they told me I could have them right then.
Well, didn't you get toted off before that?
No, they told me that I make copies and come back and get them. And then I got toted off. I said, no, that's not the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to get my copies. I said, I'm not going to leave without my copies. You know, I mean, why should I tell you what I'm looking for and then give you
It doesn't make any difference that you tell me.
No, right? It does. The law says that y'all wrong on the law bill.
No, I'm just saying, I don't care whether you tell me.
The law says I'm supposed to walk in there. Diane Brown can walk in there.
I agree. Oh,
and then she can ask for those copies, and they ain't supposed to tell her it belongs to the court reporters, because they don't. And anybody that says, no, it don't matter about how they corrected it. That's criminal.
Well, it does matter.
That's your criminal charge, okay, with malice and forethought.
They're not going to prosecute them for that.
You're not going to prosecute? Would you give me in writing that you're not going to prosecute?
No, sir.
Why?
Because I don't have to.
You don't have to?
Hmm.
I'd at least like to have one side go for a mandamus with a judge on it.
I can't
make you do your job, because the statute says job for me just like you're doing your job prosecuting, so that's fine.
Okay.
Now I want the people to prosecute, and I want this system ended, a double standard system, where people are told that the records don't belong to us, they belong to court reports.
Well, based on what you told me, though, they agreed to provide them to you. That's where I can't see that there's a crime
I had a later date. But that's not sufficient. Statute don't say I have to come back to a later date if I'm looking at
the record. We will look into the issue of the later date. But, you know, if there's an agreement to provide you with the copies, you know, there's no violation there. That's what I'm saying.
No, there is a violation. The violation was right up front when they illegally knew that they illegally told me something totally contrary to the law. They absolutely refused to give me a copy of the exemption that says these records are proprietary work product. She said it three times in front of the deputies. The deputies know work product. This office knows it's not proprietary work product. They deliberately told me that. They lied to me. They deliberately withheld the records. They are guilty of 11910, and they're going to be prosecuted that way. Regardless of whether you do it, Steve Meadows does it, or the next prosecutor does it. But that's where it's going, because I want to see the law enforced.
Yeah,
I'm not here for me. I'm not here for John Taylor. I didn't go down there to cause a disturbance. I went down there to get records and wound up in jail. And I shouldn't have wound up in jail. But somebody issued the order to put me in jail. Now, I'm going to find out who issued the order. Okay?
Steve Meadows.
And I'm gonna, I know that you're wrong, and I'm going to prove you wrong, and I'm going to go get a mandamus. But I just need something in writing that your office will not pursue criminal charges.
I'm going to.
What's that?
He's taking it.
No, I need a letter.
Because
I go to the judge, the judge is going to laugh at me. Because I go to the judge and say, Mr. Lewis will not prosecute him, and I do a mandamus, and then you come up and tell the judge, I don't know what he's talking about. We changed our minds, and I look like an idiot, and I've lost my money. Now, Bill, let's do the right thing on this, because there's too many people out there wanting records. There's too many people going down to that courthouse being told absolutely contrary to law. They're being lied to, they're being purposely withheld records. And they're being told that these records are going to belong to court reporters and not them. Bill, 17 years ago, those records were paid for.
I agree with you on that one.
And Terrell Basil, I don't care. You know what policy is, Bill? You know what the difference between policy and law is? You know, I defended myself in court and won all these other cases. I'm a pretty good civil rights lawyer and a constitutional lawyer. Let me tell you what.
So your lawyer
policy is what you're trying to set. And set by sitting over there on the other side of that desk and telling me that y'all going to adopt your own little kangaroo law here. And the kangaroo law says, well, we can do this with court reporters. And it's their records and it's their proprietary thing, and Harold Basil can have his kangaroo reward system.
John, I have
policy.
I've listened to you, but if you're going to start getting personal, we're going to end with
I'm not getting personal.
Well, you're suggesting
the law says that's illegal. It's corrupt.
This conversation is over, Mr. Caleb.
Okay.